Coming up on today's front page, it's another classic for Aidan O'Brien. That's seven, and we're only in the middle of June. Diamond Necklace winning the Prix de Dam. We're going to speak to Scott Burton, who was there to see her in all her glory. We're going to talk about the Stalls fiasco as well. Restart. Yarmouth last week was declared a runner despite rearing in the stalls. Is there going to be more starting stalls drama at Ascot this week? And speaking of Ascot, we're going to preview the five big races. And we're also going to have a debate where we have to agree on a Royal Ascot Lucky 15. Yes, welcome along to the front page. It's David Jennings here on a huge week of flat racing. It's Royal Ascot week. And joining myself to preview all the action, as well as many other big stories, we've got Mr. Matt Rennie all the way from York.
Yep, can't wait for this week. One of the best ones of the week.
And we have Ireland meets York meets France. We've got Scott Burton. Scott, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. In a terrific move. I loved seeing Diamond Necklace win the Prix de Dam at Chantilly yesterday. So what are the joys of spring?
In keeping with Royal Ascot Week, there's a real international flavour to this week's front page. So here's what's coming up on the show. We're going to speak about Aidan O'Brien's stunning start to the season, another classic from yesterday in the Prix de Dam with Diamond Necklace. We're going to have a quick chat about the starting fiasco and how it might impact Royal Ascot this week. And of course, we're going to get stuck into the nuts and bolts of the big races. All five big races this week we're going to preview. And we're going to have a proper debate at the end where we have to agree on a Lucky 15. Yes, we have to agree on a front page Royal Ascot Lucky 15. So stay tuned for that. So let's kick off with the man of the moment, the man of our lifetime. It is Aidan O'Brien. Seven classics already on the board. Scott Burton, you were there yesterday. What did you make of Diamond Necklace?
Well, it'd be one of those races which is probably quite difficult to rate highly because of the placed horses in and around Diamond Necklace. She only won by a short neck from a horse that was sent off at any price you want and won a listed down in the Southwest previously. But she came within a hundredth of a second of breaking track record, the race record set by Trev back in 2013. And Ryan said afterwards he felt there was never a stage during the race where he was going to get beaten. So the thing about her is she just keeps winning. She's won five out of five now. She's in very, very exclusive company of having won the Prix Marcel Boussac, the French Guineas, and now the Diane as well. You're talking about the likes of Zakava, Divine Proportions, Allez France, fillies like that. Blue Rose Sen is the only other one. So she's only the fifth one to do that. And I just think she's going to be incredibly hard to beat, whatever they decide to do with her now.
Okay, so Matt, where does she rank among these Ballydoyle fillies? So obviously Precise is there. He's got, you know, really good milers. And now Diamond Necklace, who's unbeaten. We don't know how good she is. I thought on Champions Weekend in Ireland last year, she just looked all class. Is she top of the pops? Is she Aidan O'Brien's best three-year-old filly?
You'd say so for now, but we could be sitting here this time next week and saying something completely different.
No, I want a decisive answer.
Now I go, absolutely, she is.
She's better than Precise?
Yes.
Been a mile there, and two, nice ground, she beats Precise?
Yes.
Rod, that's emphatic.
I'd say so. Wow. I'd say so. I was so taken by what she did in the French 1,000 guineas. Obviously, it may not have been a most ideal trip that we're going to see her excel over. Look, Scott was right. I think Scott perfectly summed it up, really. On the face of it, it didn't look like the greatest of classic wins, but sometimes horses just do what they need to do. We've seen that from so many greats in the past, so many greats that Aidan O'Brien has trained as well, where they just do enough. And I can't wait to see her for the rest of the season. I'd love for her to take on the boys at some stage. Obviously, biased, I'd like to see her go for the Gentleman International, but obviously, Mr. O'Brien and Ballydoyle have got a certain Constitution River as well, who have to consider in all of them, sort of all the puzzles being put together. But for now, I'd say she's top. And it's sort of harsh and Precise, but it's probably because Diamond Necklace was brilliant on her comeback. Precise, we know she had a setback before a mild setback before the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket, and she couldn't really shake it off and improve leaps and bounds for the Curragh. But whereas Diamond Necklace comes into this one unbeaten throughout the season so far, so it's just that's just a little bit for that. But Aidan, what on earth do you do with them for the rest of the season? It's a plethora of riches, basically.
Yeah, beautiful first world problem, Monsieur Burton. Diamond Necklace or Precise, a mile and two, nice ground, no excuses track like York. Who wins?
Diamond Necklace, I think.
That was emphatic as well.
And the weird thing about it is she's had this aura about her largely because Christophe Soumillon rode her at the end of last year and he was effusive about her. He could not see her being beaten in any race she was ever running, and he obviously rode all of the Ballydoyle two-year-olds last year. Ryan said yesterday he's still getting to know her. It's only the second time he's ridden her. Of course, he doesn't go down to Tipperary to ride work there. He relies on what the work riders tell him and what Aidan tells him that the work riders have told him. So it's possible that he's still just sort of getting to figure her out, but she's very, very straightforward, and I just think she's when you consider that she's won two Group 1s over a mile, and if you look at her pedigree, it's a Curie de Monceau pedigree, that it's the family of Magic Wand and fillies like that. Philomen, who was second in the Prix de Diane as well. They're all middle distance fillies. So the fact that she's been winning over a mile is a total bonus, really. It's just, she's just been doing that on class. And I think if they wanted to step her up to a mile and a half, she'd be a serious, serious player in the art. But all the time that she's shown she can do over a mile and two, then races like the Nassau or the Irish Champion would be a natural fit for her.
And Aidan O'Brien didn't win the first classic of the season. Obviously, Boeco won the 2000 Guineas. You're kind of going, first two or three weeks of the season, they weren't exactly flying or firing on all cylinders. All of a sudden, seven classics already on the board. Like, even by his extraordinarily high standards, this is utterly remarkable. I can't remember him starting the season with seven classics by the middle of June. This is astonishing, isn't it?
Well, the impressive thing about it is he's really, really targeted France this year in a way that he kind of hasn't traditionally. We're used to seeing the horses that rock up in the Jockey Club and the Diane being the kind of third and fourth strings. And it's quite interesting. MV Magnier said after Constitution River won the Prix du Jockey Club that they feel they have to split them up, because if they send seven or eight to Epsom, they get pelters for it. So they're kind of managing their own reputation as well, and it's to the benefit of these French classics, because they're sending horses that are absolutely trained for that. And we saw in the Jockey Club he actually, two of his three runners had run in trials over at Chantilly. Yesterday, obviously, Diamond Necklace was coming on from having run in the French Guineas. So he's got such an abundance of riches, he's now able to actually target these races properly and not just trust to luck that his third best filly or his third best colt will be competitive in a race like that. So that's part of the reason for the domination. It looks to the outside world, it certainly looks to me, like he's actually sent Constitution River and Diamond Necklace are probably his two best three-year-olds, and they happen to have ended up running in France, which is harsh on the French trainers, but it's been fantastic to watch as a neutral.
Isn't it fantastic that the Racing Post has such a good reporter over in France as well, Scott? That is the most important thing now that he's sending all these superstars to France. Right, that's Aidan O'Brien done and dusted. Let's get on to the starting fiasco. So obviously, Benvenuto Cellini, we all saw what happened in the Derby. Then last week, we had a situation at Yarmouth where Ristart, rare just as the stalls were about to open, got no run whatsoever. Boom, was declared a runner, Matt Rennie. This is going to happen this week. I think that's a certainty. Something is going to rear in the stalls. Something is going to happen at the start of the race, and everybody's going to be up in arms. It's going to happen. It's a foregone conclusion. What's your thoughts on it? What do we need to do to stop this nonsense?
It's plain and simply, get rid of the rule.
I'm firmly
in that camp, because I was an anti-post backer of Benvenuto Cellini through the winter on the Diamond Lap. Did I feel shortchanged in his run in the Derby? No. I've obviously not got my money back because it was anti-post as well.
But on that point, Matt, there are people out there who would have backed Benvenuto Cellini anti-post for the Derby, got a lovely price and said, you know what, I lay a bit off on the day, and they get stung both ways. If you back Benvenuto Cellini anti-post and then laid it off on the day, you get hit twice.
Yeah. It's just that the rule, I can see the intentions behind it, and it's good that there's always good intentions behind all these rules, I'm sure.
There's not.
But
not this one.
It's not night and day. It's almost like football, VAR is meant to be clear and obvious, but it never is. And that's where the controversy comes in. That it's almost similar in that way. If it was to do with, and it specifically said, if a stall malfunctions and is a second later than the rest of the stalls, then I can understand that. But when you're going on a horse putting its leg on the shelf or a horse rearing the stalls, that's not a technological or a malfunction. It's what the horse does, unfortunately. And
exactly.
That's what you take a game. it's a game of skilled betting as racing, but there's also an element of chance to it as well. When you're at the start, it's just what happens. It's what happens if a horse plants his feet at the Cheltenham Festival. You just have to sometimes take it, and it's opened such a big can of worms. And we can say, oh, well, it's similar in international jurisdictions and stuff, especially with Ascot coming this week, but it just makes it so opaque. There's no night and day between it, because we could have it next week, this week coming up, where a horse might bang its head on the stalls or lean on the stalls or leave his head over the other side of the stalls and be a non-runner. Or as you say, it might rear up right as the stall's going to go and it's a runner. So it's just not
I did
clear.
A column on this in Saturday's Race and Post. And as I was writing, do you ever write about something and you're writing and you just get more and more angry as you go past each paragraph? And by the time I got to the end, I was like, this is actually an utter disgrace. Like, I was thinking about it even a little bit more since then. It's almost like if you were to give the equivalent to football, okay, and say in the World Cup, okay, Germany score in the first minute, right? Just say Germany are playing France and they score, the ball is tipped off, it's hit back to their keeper, he miscontrols it and there's a goal, right? Look, it was in the first minute. Whoever backed France didn't really get a good chance because, you know, it was a mistake by the keeper in the first minute. And it was only like, why is the start of a race any different to the end of a race?
Exactly.
It's utterly madness. If a horse jinks 100 yards from the line, you don't get your money back. Why, if a horse rears in the stalls or misbehaves in the stalls, why on earth are we giving people money back? It is the most ludicrous thing I've seen in my time in racing.
What would happen?
Actually, no, that's a big claim. A lot of ludicrous stuff has happened in racing.
What would happen at Royal Ascot if, as you say, and it's quite a good point, she never even thought about that, if they're swinging for home, three, 2.5 furlongs to go when the race is really heating up, and then a horse, you know, a jockey makes a move, the horse hangs in, and you might be on the horse on the inside, it completely crucifies all of his chances then. He's not had a fair chance of winning the race, you could say, at that point either. So
I just can't understand why we have basically said that the start of a race is completely different to the stuff that happens at the end of the race. It's not. It's part of the race. Once you're loaded into the stalls, it should be game over. That's whatever happens from then on, I think. Scott, am I wrong?
I've learned a long time ago, you've got to pick your battles, and I'm not going to dissuade you of this. I'm going to say one thing about this and one thing only, which is, tragically, I'm a good deal older than both of you, and Rule 4 deductions have been a part and parcel of, it's the price of doing business of having fixed odds betting rather than pool betting. And it's nobody likes it when they have a deduction if they've had a winner and all the rest of it, but it's been happening for as long as I can remember. And I can remember the Minstrels Derby. So it's just that the notion that this is some kind of like calumny on that those people who back Christmas Day or any of the other place horses is an utter fabrication.
No, but the reason for the Rule 4, Scott, it's the reason. It's nothing to do with the Rule 4. It's never been a Rule 4.
Well, I've seen lots and lots of... The other thing is you say it's inevitable that it's going to happen this week. We had this rule at Royal Ascot last year and I don't remember it happening. What I will say is...
Yeah, but the worms hadn't been opened at that stage. The can was still closed.
The starters are really, really on it at Royal Ascot and you get quite a lot of horses withdrawn at the start before they even get a chance to cause too much trouble. So anyway, listen, everybody's heard so much about this already. They don't need to know what I think. So I'm not going to dissuade anybody here, but it's... my world didn't end on Derby Day, so we'll leave it at that.
We can have a chat over a glass of champagne or maybe a cheap pint of Stella.
Indeed. I've got to tell you, you're wrong about the Prince of Wales in a minute anyway. So
here we go. Okay, so Scott obviously is a very busy man and he's flying over for Royal Ascot this week. He's in France at the moment, so he's only got a couple of minutes left on the show, okay? So we're going to make the best use we can out of him. It's like bringing Messi on for the last 10 minutes or something. We have to get the best use out of him. Here we go.
Do you not think that if you go back to the Judmont last year when Darius was obviously at the back of the television, that Ombudsman needed Burr Castle to nearly run, you know, mile fractions just to even get to the front? He's not that fast, is he? He needs it. He needs a really fast pace to burn the others off.
I don't know, Scott. I love you, but I think you're wrong. I think Ombudsman is rapid. Fast ground. Like, they're not going to go slow. Like, it's yeah. Ascot. They're not going to crawl. And if it turns into it, I'd be nearly hoping it turns into a bit of a pace battle with Darius because I think he'd beat him for toe.
I'm a big Ombudsman for this week. But I think you can also mark up his Brigadier Gerard win as well. He was coming back. He obviously went out to Maidan during a time, bit of unstable time of the... in the region, but he had to go out there to travel out there for a prestigious Group One in the Dubai Turf, come back. So he had really harder race than people thought out when in Maidan to come back. He's beaten Gethin, who I think is a Group One winner waiting to happen this season, and he was having to give him weight as well, and he wouldn't have been fully wound up either. I think it's a really, really good performance. I mean, last year he came into Prince Wales's off the back of a defeat in the Brigadier Gerard, so he's already done one better. I just think for this week, the Prince Wales, I just think it would be his day. Whether it's his day later on in the season if they meet again, obviously we hope so, I don't know, but it's an absolute humdinger of a group.
Yes, it is, and of course Al McCam is in there as well, and loads of other Mini good Hawk. Horses. Mini Hawk. Mm-hmm. Like, we're completely forgetting about Mini Hawk, second in the arc, of course, to Derees. Right, Scott, you're so keen on Derees, okay, and I'm so keen on Ombudsman. I think Ombudsman on quick ground with a decent pace is basically unbeatable on fast ground. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was right in the Champion Stakes last year. I don't think that was the real Ombudsman. So we need a forfeit here, Scott, okay? What, you're an Ascot for the week. I'm an Ascot for the week. What's the forfeit? We need a forfeit.
Bottle of champagne, I'd say.
Is it a full bottle of champagne?
It's a full bottle. Well, it won't be by the time we finish with it, but yes, full bottle of champagne.
Okay, so whoever loses is paying. If Derees wins on Wednesday, I will be buying the champagne for you. And if Ombudsman wins, you'll be buying it for me. So stay tuned. We might get a video of that later on this week. That is Wednesday's feature. Moving on to Thursday's, it's the Gold Cup. Now, Harry Wilson, who many people are claiming is the best judge in the Racing Post, is saying that Scandinavia will not win the Gold Cup, and he fancies Raib. What do you fancy?
I'm exactly with him. I was on with the podcast with him yesterday, and we both shared exactly the same opinion. Look, I think just at the prices, you've got to take Scandinavia on. He might be the next Kypros, who knows? St. Ledger winner. I was so taken by the way Rahi won at York in the Yorkshire Cup. It was a brilliant performance against some really, really good, you know, Group 2, Group 3 horses. The division, you know, it's never the highest class of them all until we get to this point. But I was just so taken by him. I also think he was probably quite a lot backwards last year, more than he thought, and then really rapidly progressed. But even so, at Ascot last year, when he ran so well in the Queen's Vase, he was ahead of Scandinavia. Now, obviously, Scandinavia went on leaps and bounds afterwards. But I just think at the prices, Rahib is the one for me. I know Roger Vary, after the Yorkshire Cup, was straight away like, yeah, Ascot Gold Cup straight away, because sometimes you can have the horse like Rebel's Romance win the Yorkshire Cup. He's a mile and a half international, you know, globe-trotting stalwart, whereas he's going, no, this lad's an absolute stayer. He's going to thrive going off in trips. So I'm sticking with Rahib, and hopefully me and Harry can have a nice celebration afterwards.
There we go. So we have one vote against Scandinavia. I know we have to catch up time here, Scott. Are you a Scandinavia fan?
He's not a horse that I'm in love with in terms of his running style, but he just wins, doesn't he, every time he turns up. And you have to say, between us, we've managed to get to Thursday without Aidan O'Brien having a Group 1 winner. And just having said, he's won 7 out of the 10 classics so far. So I think 6-4 is a perfectly reasonable price,
we'll
to be honest.
That. We'll give him that. Yeah, absolutely. Scandinavia wins the Gold Cup. Sorry, Matt and Harry. And moving on to the Coronation Stakes on Friday. Precise against True Love, the latest instalment. It's Precise for me. Is it Precise for you?
Precise. Keep it short and sweet.
Precise for you, Scott?
I think I'd give a chance to Ballantina. This is a race that twice in the last 10 years, Philly's making their seasonal debut of one, and Donna Bryan has already won this race once. I think she was really, really good in America, and I think she'll give Precise something to think about anyway.
Good shout. Terrific trainer, Donna O'Brien. There we go. That is the Coronation Stakes. And finally, it is the Jubilee Stakes. What are we calling it at the moment?
Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes.
Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes. And probably, I would say, one of the bankers of the week in Jolly Star, who, to me, in that piece of work of Flemington, just looked a different league to Overpass. I thought he travelled double to what Overpass was travelling. I know it's a piece of work and it's very hard to judge, but to me, she looks way too good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, wholehearted agreement. I think she's miles better than Overpass. To be honest with you, when we were talking off there, I said Overpass probably miles too short for the King Charles III. I think she's more of the real deal. Obviously, we've seen Nature Strip. Obviously, Chris Waller, the trainer, he will know he needs a good one to come here nowadays and be really competitive. So, Jolie Star for me in. You can take advantage of a weak European 6 furlong division.
Absolutely, she is. Rapid. Scott?
My last word for the entire week. I think Jolly Star will win. I think Satono Rev will be second for Japan, as he was last year, behind Lazat. I can't see any of the homegrown sprinters getting too close to them. Starlust, maybe at a massive price, might fill the frame. But I think it's between those two. I think Jolly Star will win. And if you want my nap for the week, it's Earthshot in the Ribblesdale on Thursday. I think the form of her narrow defeat to Innes Moore got a massive boost yesterday in the Deanne. And I'm a big fan of taking on the Derby and Oaks also rounds when they turn up at Ascot, when it's even 2 weeks later. And it's a really tight turnaround this year. So Legacy Link takes a massive amount out of the market there. I think Earthshot will win the Ribblesdale.
There we go, Earthshot in the Ribblesdale. Scott Burton's nap, we'll have to include it in our Lucky 15. So the final part of today's front page is our Royal Ascot Lucky 15. Okay, so we all have to agree on this. But the problem is, Scott is so busy, you know, that he just came and he left us. And he said his nap of the week is Earthshot in the Ribblesdale. So even though I don't fancy it, even though you don't fancy her, we have to include Earthshot. So Earthshot gets the first slot in our Royal Ascot Lucky 15. She's in there at 6-1 in the Ribblesdale. Not a great start. We have one loser in the Lucky 15 already, Matt.
Yeah.
I suppose the good news is I think there's still double the odds for one winner in Lucky 15 these days, is there?
Indeed.
Maybe treble the odds with some firms. So you never know. You might get your money back. So here we go. So we've Earthshot in the Ribblesdale. Give me your cases. Mention a few there and I'll give you the heave-ho where I'll say yes.
I think we have to put Jolly Star in there.
Short though, isn't it? I agree, but she's short, isn't she?
Just given the dearth of the sprinting division here. I mean, I like Scott's point about Satono Rev, but I think he's just gonna finish second again. I think she's more of a definitely a safe one given her price. I just think you've got to include her, especially for international purposes. Okay. It's an international meeting, DJ. We've got to have a little bit of a flair in there.
We'll throw in Jolly Star then in the Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes. Did I get that right?
Yes, bang on.
Wow.
Bang on.
There we go. So it's Jolly Star, it's Earthshot. Now, what about the handicaps? Have we anything for them?
You'd know them better than I would do. They're an absolute right.
I'm going to throw out a few here, okay? Yeah. I thought potentially, not in handicaps now, but I thought the Queen's Vase. Now, a lot of people are really fancying Gallian in the Queen's Vase. For me, the banker of the week is against Gallian. And I hate doing this because possibly one of the shrewdest judges in racing, a man that will be on Good Morning Royal Ascot this week, Martin Dixon, this is his banker the whole week, Gallian. Everybody seems to fancy Gallian. Even when you're seeing these best bets, it's Gallian, Gallian, Gallian. But for me, Limestone is just a real quality stayer. I could see Limestone potentially turning up in Group 1s later on in the season. Loved what he did at Navan. I was working that day and Dylan Brem of Monaghan made the early running and then he kind of took a back seat, maybe leaving the back straight and sat back the third, and you're kind of going, oh, what the hell is going on here? This is a bit of a strange manoeuvre. And then he quickened up so impressively to beat Asik here. New Zealand was third. I thought it was a real strong run. Carmers, who won the same race at Navan last year, went on to win the Queen's Vase. And the minute the race was over, Joseph said, it's Queen's Vase for Limestone. And they wanted to learn more about him here with a view for the Queen's Vase. So I think Martin Dixon, for the first time in his life, is going to be wrong. Because I think Limestone is going to win the Queen's Vase. 3-1, open up fives, now threes. Have I made a compelling case to include Limestone? Or do you trust Martin Dixon more?
I trust you on this one, DJ.
Are an idiot then. I was, because Martin Dixon is the man.
I know. Sometimes blind people got to leap across cliffs, haven't they, sometimes? But you're right about at Navan. He was just so, so impressive. When Joseph O'Brien targets a race, he rarely, rarely misses, even if it's a more obvious way to go forward for Royal Ascot. If he nails one down and goes, yep, this is the Queen's Vase horse, you're usually going to get your money's worth. And you said, a live fancy for the St. Ledger. It was interesting to find out what you said about Dylan Brown McMonagall took him forward and then back. So he's probably going to be quite versatile in whatever way they want to run him as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think. Is he good enough to include? Have we got him in there?
Yes, he's
okay.
There we go.
So Earthshot,
Jolly Star, Limestone.
And Limestone. So we need one more. Will we try and find a bit of a price? Like, is there anything at bigger prices that you like?
I like Coppel in the Commonwealth Cup. Just because it's, I know everyone's on Venetian Sun. I think she's I had my doubts about her after a 1,000 guineas run. I just thought, has she trained on? Has she not now? Haydock the last day, brilliant performance, but it was the The whole day was a bit of a mess, really. Given it was the whole saga that we had another one in Britain, and I just think I really like the way Koppel won the Commonwealth Cup trial. I feel he's going to have come on leaps and bounds for it. And if there's a trainer of horses, specifically Group One sprinters, that you want to have on side, Clive Cox would be right top of the list. You know, and he was a brilliant juvenile cup. He disappointed once in Deauville in the pre-morning, but apart from that, he ran storm up behind Gestad in the Coventry, beat Puerto Rico in the Richmond Stakes. We know what Puerto Rico went on to do. He went on to brilliant Group One winning juvenile. So I just think with that track, good track performances. I know Venetian Sun was impressive in the Albany last year, but I just at the price I want to take her on. I think Koppel at 12s, around sort of that double figure price, I'm very much happy to have a go at it. And on a sprint division, where obviously we know anything can happen. Time Sandals won the race at 25-1 last year.
No, not getting in. No, can't have Koppel in there. No.
After such a detailed case,
like
it was
very impressive, Matt, I have to say. And when you get into full flow, you are some operator, I have to say, right? But I can't include Koppel. And I know Maddie Playle, who will be on Good Morning Royal Ascot this week, is really keen on Koppel as well. I like Wise Approach because Wise Approach to me is just your ultimate Commonwealth Cup. One aim and one aim only this season. I thought the comeback run at Ascot when caught on the wrong side was reasonably eye-catching. William Buick didn't even put him into the race. Last time, I thought it was very much a case of, okay, this will leave him spot on for the Commonwealth Cup. It's just, when you just have this feeling that everything has been geared towards it. I think everybody has been too harsh on him for his two runs this season. He's still a Group 1 winner. He's had the penalty up until now, the Group 1 penalty. Doesn't have it here. I think Charlie Appleby knows that. And I doubt he was at peak, like, everything in his last two races. So I'm with Wise Approach. So we can't have Koppel or Wise Approach. So they're both gone, okay?
No one from the Commonwealth.
Okay, no one from the Commonwealth. One that I was tempted to give a shout-out to was Moonfall in the Britannia. I thought looked really well handicapped off a mark in 90. Just looks like, to me, like the ultimate plot. But it's a good race organised in there, where Goosers looks really smart as well for Hugo Parmer. But I did think Moonfall was potentially very well handicapped. Anything maybe on the first 2 days? So We've obviously got Jolly Star on the Saturday. We've got the Ribblesdale on Thursday covered with Scott's loser, Earthshot, okay, against Legacy Link. Okay, sorry about that. And on, what was our other one then? We've one other one included. Limestone on Wednesday. Queensland. Anything for the first day? Can we kick off with a winner?
Well, see, I do by sort of trial and error, I like Docklands in the Queen Anne.
No, gone.
We're going to not go for that one.
No.
In the King Charles III.
No, what?
Rayevka.
No. Go on, make your case, though.
I thought she was absolutely sublime in the pre-St. George's last time. I think they finally worked out, remarkably, that she is a sprinter. I know she's related to Raif, who's a classic winner over a mile. I just think, again, the division's so... it's poor. It's a poor division. As far as... I love her, but she's shown nothing this season. Overpass said, I'm happy to take on at the prices. I just think she was brilliant in the pre-St. George's. And Francis Graffard had come out and said, look, oh, no, she's actually now just an out-and-out speedball. Finally worked her out, and if there's a person you want to trust as well, it's Monsieur Graffard.
But the thing is, Matt, there's 35 races. This is a lucky 15 that needs to be top class. Of 35 races, are we really going to include Rayevka in the King Charles? There's too many doubts, is there?
No, we can leave her out.
Can I give a shout out to one on the opening day that you're definitely not going to agree with? But I studied the race in depth yesterday, and I've come to the conclusion people are not going to like this. I think Ghostwriter wins the Wolverton. I obviously hasn't ran since the Hardwick last year. That run in the Hardwick was a hell of a run that's worked out really well against Rebel's Romance. And if you go back and look at the race, Tony travelled beautifully through the race. I don't think he's a full mile and a half horse. I think mile and two. And running against Rebel's Romance in the Hardwick compared to running in the Wolverton against horses who are Group 2, Group 3 level, I have a feeling he's a bit better than them. And the thing that worried me, obviously, that we haven't seen him since he reared up. Do you remember in the saddle when he was being saddled in the Princess of Wales Stakes?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
At Newmarket last year. And I was saying, what's gone wrong? Obviously, plenty has gone wrong. But there was an interview with Kevin Philippa-Defoy a couple of weeks ago, good few weeks ago, and he was asked about Ghostwriter. And he said, no, we're going straight to either the Wolverton or the Hardwick, but probably the Wolverton. And it was obviously on his radar for a long time that this is an ideal race for Ghostwriter. Lovely drawn stall four. I think it could be a big day for Kia on day one with Ghostwriter. But I know you're not going to agree, so... It's a bit pointless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so we need one more, okay? Moving on to Wednesday then, okay? Wednesday, we've got the Queen Mary. We've got, obviously, we've Limestone in there in the Queen's Vase. Ombudsman is probably too short to include, isn't he? And Scott would absolutely kill us, okay? So nothing really on the Wednesday. Okay, Thursday. Here we go, Thursday. Thursday, we kick off with the Chesham Aix-les-Chapelle. Obviously has a chance for Aidan O'Brien, 6-4 favourite. We've got the King George the Fifth Stakes. We've got the Ribblesdale, which we've already got our loser in, of course. Britannia, Gold Cup, Scandinavia's too short. Hampton Court. No, we'll have to move on to Friday, Matt. Here we go. Right, Friday is the day. Commonwealth Cup, we spoke about. The Albany. Now, I like one of the Albany. Sun Goddess is obviously your favourite. I thought Light of Dawn potentially looked like a superstar. What did you think?
Yeah, exactly the same.
Oh, yes, here we go.
Yeah, with her, I thought she was absolutely brilliant on her debut. Look, just again, I think you could probably make the case better for me, but...
Well, the thing I liked about Light of Dawn, and you very rarely hear trainers say this after the race, Carol Burke was interviewed and he said to James Dowd before the race, we're already thinking of the Albany, so give her an easy enough race if you can, because we don't want to have too hard of a race, you know, whatever, 10 days out or 12 days out from the Albany. And it was just the way she was ridden. She was ridden out the back. She came through. And I think Capilano, the second horse for Michael Dodds, loved that run of his at first time out at Newcastle. If you get a chance, watch it. I think that horse is going to win maidens and be a decent enough handicapper. And Light of Dawn made him look really average. So I think that form is strong. I know Sun Goddess represents the top of the pops connections from Ballydoyle, but I just have a sneaky suspicion that Light of Dawn could be a star.
And if Carl Burke's saying that as well, he would, if he's known at the Albany horse, he did exactly the same with Venetian Sun last year. Carlisle, bang, we're going straight to Ascot.
Are we in agreement?
I'm in agreement with that, Ian. Yes.
Here we go.
We finally got there.
It is Light of Dawn in the Albany. So the front pages, lucky 15 for Royal Ascot, Earthshot for Scott Burton in the Ribblesdale against Legacy Link. But we never know. We could get the other three up. You never know.
Exactly.
So we have got Light of Dawn in the Albany. We've got Limestone in the Queen's Vase. And we've got Jolly Star in the Jubilee Stakes on Saturday. Looking forward to the week.
Very much so, very much so. It's the true sign that summer's here. We've got racing, there's cricket, there's the World Cup. I don't really know how I'm going to sleep throughout the week, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, if you do sleep, make sure you wake up at 8:30 for Good Morning Royal Ascot. We have got, had to cry and say goodbye to him from up in the ante a few months ago, but he is back for every day of Royal Ascot, up bright and early. He is a morning person, eats the same breakfast every morning. He does little tucks, he eats, you know, little kids' crackers and maybe a little Dairy Lee cheese. Johnny Dineen is on every day for Good Morning Royal Ascot. We've got Tom Siegel, we've got Matty Plaid, we've got Martin Dixon. We've got unbelievable guests. 8:30, you've got to watch it every morning to hear all about what's going to happen on all 5 days of Royal Ascot. And of course, In the Know, what a show that is. Not quite as good as Good Morning Royal Ascot, but it's quite decent. Ross does a decent enough job, I suppose, in the chair. But In the Know is at 6:30 every day with Keels. Keels, the main man this week on In the Know. One of my favourite people in life, Paul Keighley. There we go. But that has been the front page. My thanks to Scott, even though he gave us a loser for Royal Ascot Lucky 15. To Matt Rennie, who's been terrific as always. I've been David Jennings. It's Royal Ascot week. Enjoy it.